Okay, welcome back to Ringside Ratings, Rants and Reflections, or Rants, Reflections, Ratings. It works either way. Guys, how are you doing? Tom?
Good, good, mate. This isn't mega professional, but I've been 6 weeks off the drink, so I'm back on it.
Very
Six
good.
weeks today, so I need to talk to you guys, and then I've got a fillet steak waiting. So
Desperate
typical.
times call for desperate measures. Dougie, what are you on today? If Tom's got the red wine, what are you working with?
My first cup of coffee out of a ring, an official Ring Magazine logo mug.
It's all about the time zones, I'm guessing. I'm guessing Tom
Yeah.
today didn't start with a mug of red wine anyway.
Not a coffee.
Hey, so Dougie, last time we talked, you were going to go and see Ryan Garcia fight before Javier Fortuna. What did you make of Ryan?
I thought it was an improvement from his performance in April against Emmanuel Tagoe. Going into the fight, the two things that I noted was Ryan Garcia is no longer a lightweight. He can comfortably fight on the world-class level, I believe, at junior welterweight. And I believe he has the frame to be a potential world-class force at welterweight. One of the things that I noticed before his previous bout in April in San Antonio, Texas, before the fight with Tagoe, was that when he was standing around Bernard Hopkins and Gabriel Rosado, I noticed they had the exact same physical frame, almost the same bone structure. And as you know, Hopkins is an all-time great middleweight, and Gabriel Rosales, I'm sorry, yeah, Rosado. Gabriel Rosado, was world class from 154 pounds, at least to 160, and a solid gatekeeper at 168. So, I knew that Ryan would be growing into his body this year. He's filling out, and I think he's filled out physically very well. But I see more of the influence of his new trainer Joe Goosen. He's putting punches together a little bit better. There's still a lot of room for improvement at age 23, with the number of fights he has. He's still a work in progress, but I do see that progress. I thought progress was made in the way he dispatched Javier Fortuna.
Tom, what was your take? And in terms of progress, has he made enough progress to be one of those top guys at whether it's 135 or 140?
Still kind of unproven to me, Chris, at 140, because Fortuna, to be honest, isn't even a full lightweight. If Doug could correct me here, but I'm sure he moved up from 130. So the idea that he's
He
fighting him at
did.
140, it's not even a full junior welterweight fight. So I would need to see him in against something more substantial at 140. I'm a believer in Ryan Garcia. He gets a lot of flack, which I think basically comes down to a couple of things. Oscar had the same thing surrounding him, which he's a good-looking kid, and now he's got the whole social media influence. So it looks like he's not really a hungry fighter. I think that's false. I think that he's a real fighting man. But the one thing that I keep seeing every time I watch him is he is so static after he lets his hands go. Like, he doesn't move his head. Even the basics, like if you throw straight, move your head once. If you throw a hook, then move your head twice. There's none of that. And if you're in against someone like a world-class operator, and I keep going back to Tank because that's the guy that he is openly targeting, then if he gets caught flush with his chin in the air, then that might be the end of the fight. I think that he needs to work on, there's some defensive stuff there that I would definitely focus on.
Doug, are we part of the problem keeping talking about Tank and Garcia feeding the machine and all the rest of it? Because it seems like we do go around in circles. Now, hey, I'm hungry for these fights, obviously, but
Yes.
like, geez, man. I mean, it just seems
We
to
are part of the problem. I mean, we are because I mean, and I'm guilty of this. I wrote an advance on the Garcia Fortuna fight, and my headline was, Garcia talking about a potential pay-per-view, how many pay-per-view buys he believes a showdown with Gervonta Davis would yield. And I made that the lead because, quite frankly, that was the most interesting thing that we talked about in our 10 and 15 minute, Zoom interview. The bottom line is Javier Fortuna is a respected veteran, fought a lot of good fighters. He was rated by Ring Magazine in our lightweight top 10 at number 9, where he belonged. Really more of a fringe contender at lightweight. And Tom, you're right. He came up from junior lightweight. In fact, he started his career at featherweight. That's where he was really special. But there's not a lot of, you know, there wasn't a lot to talk about that matchup. Garcia figured to knock him out at some point during this fight. He just has too many physical advantages over the veteran who had the edge, obviously, in experience. What's interesting is to talk about Gervonta Davis, because he's exciting. Gervonta is exciting. He's got his own brand of charisma. He's dynamic in the ring. And Ryan Garcia has personality. So it's only natural for not just fans, but members of the media to focus on a potential matchup between the two.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, Tom. So obviously, you know, I'm writing a book about Matthew Saad Muhammad, and I'm close to wrapping it up. But the bit I'm working on now is where he loses his crown to Dwight Braxton. And obviously that was supposed to be just a warm-up fight for the big Michael Spinks bounty at the end, you know, $4 or $5 million showdown, which was insane money at the time. Yeah. And of course, he got knocked off. And then obviously we see this. We either see fighters get knocked off, like, say, a Juan Manuel Lopez and Gamboa style situation, or we see these fights happening 5 years too late, like a Mayweather-Pacquiao. Yeah. I mean, how much marinade is enough?
I don't even think it's coming down to marinade. I mean, if you look back at Leonard and Hearns, that fight was on the table for Sugar Ray Leonard probably early 1980, somewhere around there. Angelo Dundee was declining it, knowing full well they would let it build and then it would happen. It's kind of different right now. I mean, basically the fights are getting stalled because of promoter rivalry and network rivalry. It's different now, and it sucks. It's worse. Like, I think back in 1980, I think if you're a fight fan, you know that sooner, you know unequivocally that Sugar Ray Leonard and Thomas Hearns are going to end up in the ring. You know, it's going to happen. Whereas we're having this discussion and there's like a kind of negative vibe around it, because really we've not got a thing to get excited about. It's just talking both ways. Excuse me. I see that Tank has put on Twitter, I'm paraphrasing, but something along the lines of, I'm not responding to Ryan Garcia because I don't think he's a man of his word. If there's something to talk about, I'll start talking back to him then. Even that, it's just one big giant downer. I'm not blaming Tank for saying that. Like, I think that let's start getting excited when there's a name on the contract. It's quite depressing. I mean, I don't think it will happen this year. And
well, Tom, contracts is, that's what it's really all about. You talk about network, promotional and network rivalries. That's always existed. The networks, the three major networks in the U.S., they were rivals. They didn't work together. And promoters, Aaron and King couldn't stand each other, but contractually they could work together. Yeah,
exactly. They still came together. Basically, it's more of a stalemate now, in my opinion. It's more the rivalries between promoters, these guys just not getting on, pure potency. I know that King and Adam didn't, but there was always a professional respect there. There's a line being crossed now, and it's a lot more stupid.
Well, they could still do business. They would do business when it made sense. And it, you know, for this era, Garcia Davis makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. We don't need to marinate it. We can microwave it, and they could have a series, and it would everybody would get paid. The problem is that the network contracts is that the networks have exclusivity with certain fighters. And that's why we get situations like Tyson Lewis or Pacquiao Mayweather, where this anticipated fan demanded dream matchup doesn't happen until well after the expiration date.
It's frustrating. It's like going into a store and, you know, you can look, but you can't touch, that kind of stuff. And you can see all these things on the shelf and you're like, wow, look at that. Look at that. Look at that. We can't have any of them.
Yeah.
But hopefully we do. And did I see something about Lomachenko being mentioned for Garcia now? Or is that?
I would take that fight. I mean, I'd put it this way. If he can coax Lomachenko up to 140, I mean, Lomachenko's not even a natural lightweight. So, you know, he could make 130, but I don't think you're getting Lomachenko to come up to 140. And if Ryan sticks to his word, which Tank says he can't, then then at the end of the day, he's not moving below 140. If that fight happens, you know, to be fair to Lomachenko, I think it needs to be at 135.
Do you know what? I tell you what, if anything's got catch weight, 137.5 on it is that.
yeah, absolutely. But again, even that, Tris, that to me is kind of reminds me, I was looking at a fight the other night between Hopkins and Winky Wright, and it was made at a catch weight, but the catch weight was absolute perfection for Hopkins and still an absolute nightmare for Winky Wright, and that would be the case here. I mean, if you're doing a catch weight for Lomachenko at 137.5, he could make 130, so you're not really doing him that many favours, whereas Ryan coming down to 137.5 is probably perfect for him.
Yeah, and then obviously another thing we've mentioned at 135, or another talent we've mentioned is possibly someone raiding that, is Shakur Stevenson. They've just announced his fight, Tom. You just put it up on the Ring Magazine website. Dougie, one that you're excited about, Robson Consecao?
You know, I thought Robson did very well against Oscar Valdez. He had a style that was going to be difficult for the Mexican pressure fighter. This fight is I think it's a matchup for the real boxing purists, the sort of longtime observers that appreciate the finer points of boxing, because there's going to be a lot of skill and technique and a lot of tactics on display. It's not going to be Gotti Ward. I'll just leave it as that. But I think Stevenson has the kind of boxing style that is not just kryptonite for aggressive fighters, but also for fellow boxers. He's got that. He's got that sort of Pennell Whitaker. Hopkins was the same way. This is not a positive description of a style, but they're, I call them nullifiers. Andre Ward was very good with this, and Ward was kryptonite against fellow boxers. They take away the one or two good things that the boxer is adept at, and then you're left with whatever they decide to employ.
Floyd Mayweather's a perfect example.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So Tom, does this fight, the Shakur fight now, does that give you any clue as to where they might be going with him?
No. To me, it's kind of marking time. I mean, Robson Consecao is a really good opponent, but really good's not enough against a potentially great Shakur Stevenson. So, you know, 135 pounds against the elite, the guys we talk about week in, week out, is where we're going to see Shakur Stevenson. So there's nothing in my mind that attaches, you know, Shakur Stevenson to the fights we want to see in this next fight. No, and I expect him, like Doug says, I think you're looking at a good boxing match that goes 12 rounds and it's like 119, 109, somewhere around there.
Dougie, on a positive side with this, they're taking him back to Newark, the Prudential Center. I mean, how big can Shakur become there? I mean, the last time I remember the Prudential selling out for someone on a regular basis was probably Thomas Adamek, right?
Yes, with the Polish support. We'll see. I do think that Shakur's stature has grown. He's had more exposure since his last appearance in Newark. I think it's a good idea for Top Rank to continually bring him back. But realistically, no, it's not going to be like taking Miguel Cotto to Madison Square Garden on the eve of the Puerto Rican Day Parade, right? Where right out of the gate, you know, versus Muhammad Abdullah, he's getting, you know, 8,000 or 9,000 fans, you know, mainly Puerto Rican fans.
Was Malignaggi at that time of the year?
Malignaggi was the next year. And then I think Zab Judah was the next year. And by the time he fought Zab Judah, the place was absolutely filled to the rafters. It was at maximum capacity. I don't see something like that, but he can get a dedicated fan base. I do believe he can do that. I mean, he returns as a unified junior lightweight champion. He returns with the Ring Magazine championship belt. he's had more exposure on ESPN. So he'll get more fans than he had the last time. And if they keep bringing him back on at least a semi-regular basis, it'll grow. He's never going to sell the place out. I'll leave it at that.
Hey, Tom Dougie says they're semi-regular basis, which reminds me, Danny Garcia's back this weekend. It's been a while. It's been a minute. And Danny's career has seemed to be stop-start, but he's obviously built himself to a level where he can sort of pick and choose, right? Where, you know, yeah, he has a name and he can guarantee he put in a few, you know, a certain amount of bums on seats, a certain level of interest. But he's fighting Jose Benavidez, which could be a good fight, right? Because Danny's due possibly a banana skin at some point.
Yes, and especially at the weight. I mean, I don't think Danny Garcia is a junior middleweight. I mean, fighters move up for a lot of reasons. If you get Tony Bellew as an example, light heavy, how he was making light heavy, I'll never know, straight up to cruiserweight without a blink, you have to move up. Sugar Shane Mosley, lightweight, probably had to move up, but Oscar De La Hoya, 2 weeks up, was a huge incentive and multi-millions on the line. To me, Danny Garcia is moving up here because he has no choice. There's just nowhere to go. I don't think he's moving up because it's a good idea. I don't think he's moving up because he's got a realistic, you know, against Jermell Charlo, not a chance. You know, I wouldn't want Danny Garcia to take that fight. So I think the weight is wrong for him. I think he is a better fighter than Jose Benavidez, but he's out with his weight class. So if that could contribute to a shock result, if we can call it that, then I wouldn't be in the least bit surprised.
Dougie, what do you make of the career of Danny Garcia and how that's panned out the last 3 or 4 years? I mean, I know obviously we had the COVID and that kind of stuff, but it just doesn't seem that he's really kicked on. You know, I know obviously there was Errol Spence, but going into that, like, it just didn't. It just came off the boil,
well,
right?
You put it well when you said there starts and stops to it.
He's a part timer.
There's these lulls that get in the way of his momentum, which, had he been more active and more willing to fight the top welterweights once he moved from 140 to 147, I think he could have been built into a real attraction. And he does sell tickets, like you said, especially at Barclays Center in Brooklyn, where he's fought many times, including some notable opponents. But I was impressed with, I'll say, the Garcias, Danny and his father, Angel, because early in his career, they did roll the dice. As a junior welterweight, he took on a string of difficult veteran fighters, which really forged him into the junior welterweight champion, the real lineal Ring Magazine junior welterweight champion that he would become. And he did it in his early to mid-20s. And his father always, you know, would harken back to Sugar Ray Leonard and Thomas Hearns and say, hey, Hearns was 22, Sugar Ray Leonard was 25. When you have these tough fights early, you get it out of the way, you get that experience, and it sets up other big fights for when you're in your late 20s or early 30s, which is exactly what happened, with the Fab Four, the Four Kings. He fought in succession Nate Campbell, Kendall Holt, Eric Morales, who was still dangerous at that time. He had 2 fights with Morales and learned a lot from the first fight. Rolled the dice against Amir Khan when both guys held sanctioning body world titles, and beating Khan, which was an upset. You know, he unified titles and won the Ring Magazine belt and defended it against the likes of Lucas Matisse
and Zab Judah.
And Zab Judah. So when you look at what he did at 140, and he did that all in his 20s, I think what happened was the father was like, that's enough. I've put your health at risk. We've rolled the dice enough. We've proven your mettle. We've got all these belts. We've got the accolades. We've made some money. Once they moved to 147, it was sort of more pick and choose. But he did eventually fight the likes of, Sean Porter and Errol Spence, which is saying, and Keith Thurman as well. So, you know, at the end of the day, when you do look at his resume, when you take a step back, you're not that you you're less enthused about him since he moved up to 147 because he took easy fight, then a hard fight, then disappear for a while, then come back against a respectable opponent. So the momentum wasn't there. But when you take a step back and look at all the names that he's shared the ring with, it is impressive.
Yeah, I didn't mean to knock Danny Garcia, and I hope no one took it that way. But I think what Dougie there has done is perfectly illustrate, Tom, that he set the bar so high with that run of fights. You know, there was no backing down. He fought Morales, he fought Khan, he fought Morales again, he fought Judah, he fought Matisse, he fought Holt, he fought Campbell, back to back to back, not necessarily in that order. But, you know, and then it just seems like that momentum was lost. But when Dougie explains it and puts it into the terms of, you know, the guy's had some wars, he's built some mileage up, let's put the brakes on a little bit and maybe make some money and cash in on the efforts he's put in. And it kind of makes good sense, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, the only welterweight that he's not tangled with is Crawford, which for the longest time, and like I say, Danny Garcia's had these big layoffs, plus the fact when Crawford was with Top Rank, you know you're not going to see that fight. So he's kind of, this is why I'm saying, he's kind of out of options, excuse me, at welterweight, which explains the leap up. But even though I'm calling him a part-timer and all the rest of it, I've got nothing but respect for what he's accomplished. But at junior welterweight, I mean, and also the fact that he went after the top guns in the welterweight division. I mean, he didn't have the same success in that division, but he's coming up. So, you know, you need to give him a break when he's in there with certain welterweights and maybe natural weight. But I don't foresee a successful run at junior middleweight. That's personally what I believe. But I'm glad if he can come in and make millions of dollars, like Doug alluded to, he's in, and yourself, he's earned the right to cash in because he took the chance. He's as a young man against fabulous opposition, you know, engaging the kind of fights that we just wish we were seeing more often. Danny Garcia was in them regularly at 140 pounds, so he deserves credit for that.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot to be said for that in terms of where Danny's at now. And, you know, certainly with the way that Dougie framed it, I'm a lot more sympathetic to that. Not that he cared too much. Do you know what? I think the big fight that he missed on that I would have personally liked would have been the Kell Brook fight. I think Danny Garcia at Kell Brook at 147 would have been a great fight. But I think that was when Kell was champ. And, you know, for whatever reason, Kell couldn't land the big fish until he landed the monster fish.
I like Special K in that fight. If he's on form, I like Kell Brook in that fight.
I mean, I think it was close to a pick-em, wasn't it? Because I would have said, but great fight. Hey, Dougie, let me ask you this about the Oscar issue. How's the feedback been so far? Have you been called out?
It's been
so.
Yeah.
Have you been
nothing negative
called out? No shill comments.
Well, listen, maybe I have been called out, but I probably muted that person, so I don't see it on Twitter.
Seen one negative comment on it. Like someone came in and said to me, "Doesn't Oscar own the magazine?" And that was it. Other than that, like, I think we probably sold hardcore fans short. At the end of the day, and I think we discussed this, yes, Oscar owns a magazine, but the bottom line is the guy was a great fighter, a multi-weight world champion, a Hall of Famer, fought everybody. Resume is spectacular. So I think fans took that into account more than perhaps we expected, just because social media is such a cesspit of bullshit so social media at the end of the day can be a cesspit of negativity, but no, it was pretty good. And I thought the cover was nice as well, a bit more unusual because Oscar is an amateur in an important part of his life, like just, you know, frozen in time almost. It was it went down well.
Some great stuff. And I think you know what, Dougie, when you talk about Oscar as a fighter, right, I always think back to, I think, two of the fights that spring to mind are the Vargas fight and the Mayorga fight.
Yes.
Because the stakes were so high with the grudges.
Yes.
Right. In the sense that he was almost defending in a way boxing's honor. He was obviously the good guy in the bad guy scenario. So
yep.
There were people, and it was kind of before villains were sort of fashionable. So right. people were still rooting for the Golden Boys at work.
Right. You know, I think teach them a lesson. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, I think there was a lot of, I think that's there was a lot of pressure on him going into those fights, you know, and also the way that he fought, you know, he's very conventional and all the rest of it, you know, very textbook. And he was sort of fighting for the honor of boxing in many ways. And I thought the stakes were high.
It was the boxer versus the brawlers, although Fernando Vargas was a 1996 U.S. Olympian and he had excellent technique. Mayorga certainly a lot rawer, you know, very raw, but somebody who had proven his medal and his world-class status against Olympians like Vernon Forrest. So you're absolutely right. And those are the two most satisfying victories, according to the Golden Boy himself, of his career. And it was interesting because Vargas had his own fan base and a lot of hardcore fans, you know, as Tom was saying, just like Ryan Garcia is experiencing now. Some of them always wanted to see Oscar get beat because he was the face of boxing and he was the Golden Boy and he was a pretty boy. You know, and he had the gold medal shine and the media darling and that whole thing. But you're absolutely right in that the crossover demographic, especially the female fans, had Oscar's back. So when he would win, it was like this victory, like, hey, the right guy won, the good guy won. Because, you know, Vargas could be, you know, Vargas had, you know, out of the ring legal troubles. He was getting into fights and, you know, going after people with golf clubs. I used to read about Vargas, not in the sports pages, but like, you know, in just like the news about crime and stuff. Like, oh, man, he assaulted a dude at an ice rink. What? You know, just be like, you know, you see his mugshot in there and then the fighter that he punched out on, you know, in an ice ring with a, you know, a black eye. I'm like, damn, dude, this guy is, he's hardcore for real, you know? And then with Mayorga, he had his fans because of that shtick, you know, with the cigarette, which was real. He would do that before and after the fights and the wild nature. And he took the trash talk to another level. He was super vulgar. And with that fight, I think that was actually Oscar's most satisfying win, because Mayorga had insulted Oscar's family. And so that was kind of like a family pride and a family victory when he knocked him out. And 2006, when that fight happened, we didn't know how much of Oscar would be left. He had sat out all of 2005. And, you know, we really didn't know if he still wanted to be a fighter. He had been stopped by Bernard Hopkins, and a lot of folks were like saying, hey, dude, that's enough. You've had a great career. You're financially secure, get out of boxing. And I think that fight let Oscar know that there was still some fire in his belly. He still was a fighter at heart.
Hey, Tom, good points there by Dougie. Obviously, I think the Mayorga fight, you know what? I remember watching that live and thinking, this is about as close to Cal's Aggie Lacey as I've seen until the stoppage came, because it was like Oscar was throwing punches on lasers. Basically, everything seemed to hit.
Yeah. I think when the fight was playing out on the HBO broadcast, excuse me, Emmanuel Stewart called it right. It was an amateur against a professional. And what Oscar did in the fight, and Stewart pointed this out as well, and this is genius if you know what you're doing in the ring, but Mayorga always needed what was called rush room. So he would almost start an attack by running at you with these flailing fists. And if you watch the fight, every time Oscar drops an angle, he takes a step forward. So he kept taking Mayorga's rush room away. So that a bit of space where Mayorga needed to start flailing, every time Mayorga was turned, it wasn't there. Oscar was right in front of him, popping a jab in his face or hitting him with a lead left hook or going to the body. It was a brilliant game plan from start to finish. But the De La Hoya that I remember is 99 into 2000, where you've got Quarte, Carr, a warm-up. Oba Carr is a warm-up with Trinidad already basically coming up. So then Trinidad, then Daryl Coley, then Mosley. And I think, so let me get the rest right, that must have been in 14 months. And you've got three super fights in there with two warm-ups that were extremely dangerous. Oba Carr was in a very dangerous fight. I think, Doug, correct me if I'm wrong, had only lost to Quarte and Trinidad at that point. And went in against Oscar. Daryl Coley, I think, had one defeat early on in his career. You know, three super fights in 14 months.
Oba Carr, it was controversial. That was, exactly. Coley was a difficult boxer.
Yeah,
he was a really quality guy.
Yeah, you think of the conversation we've just had about Ryan Garcia and Tank. And then, you know, De La Hoya Quarte was a bona fide super fight. De La Hoya Trinidad was talked about Leonard Hearn's level. And De La Hoya Mosley was an authentic super fight. And we're talking about now, excuse me, waiting 4 years for super fights. You know, and there's three inside 14 months with dangerous warm-ups in the middle. And I think that just speaks volumes about how great a fighter Oscar De La Hoya was.
Yeah, I don't think you can dispute that. Hey, guys, I don't know if either of you heard of this, but have you heard that the Joshua fight now doesn't have a broadcast partner in the UK?
I heard that.
I saw some rumblings on Twitter, but I didn't know.
I know for a fact that we've not had any promotion. Like someone was saying to me, what do you make of the fact that Sky aren't promoting yet or there's nothing mentioned yet? And I'm like, well, they're maybe just coming into it this week. Well, we're in Monday. And yep, to your point, I've not seen much kicking off. No,
there's speculation then they're not doing it. And I just checked their Sky Sports box office page on their website, and it says future events to be announced. So there's nothing there. It seemed like it was almost cut and dry that they were going to have it, right? Because they won some kind of bid, right? I'm sure that this isn't me just thinking about this, you know, stuff I dreamt up a couple of weeks ago. It seemed to be in the news that although Joshua was going to be with DAZN moving forwards, he had to sign this fight with Usyk. And now it seems like there's no UK coverage for Joshua.
Well, let's hope that the fight is still, everything's still okay, because, you know, that would be gut-wrenching if the fight is somehow in jeopardy and that's the reason behind it. I can't think, there's no way the fight's going to go off without a UK broadcaster. So let's just hope it's still in place. Because Conor Benn and Chris Eubank Jr., now that fight has divided people, but, you know, I'm really looking forward to that if it comes off. I think it's brilliant for British boxing. But that seems to have reached a sticking point. There was mention today that Chris Jr. might be going in another direction. So if Joshua Usyk 2 is in jeopardy and that fight's in jeopardy, then that's not boding well for the remainder of 2022.
The only thing I would say about Joshua Usyk is I can't imagine that the money from the UK broadcast is anything like the amount that's on offer in Saudi Arabia. So the UK broadcast deal is probably a drop in the ocean to any of the people with big, big money over there. So it wouldn't surprise me if it went on without a UK broadcaster, to be quite frank. It would just be boxing fans.
Yeah, I mean, like, monetarily, I get it. But, you know, in terms of, I mean, that would just stink to high heaven. You know, just that I think that would be absolutely dreadful. But we'll see what happens. Okay. Boxing's never done shocking me.
Yeah, I don't know. And talking of shocks and talking of the heavyweight division, actually, we'll get onto some rants now. Dougie, I'll start off with you, okay? Are you ready?
I'm ready.
You sure? Do you want one more slurp of coffee as you?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay, right. Quit while Dougie's got a coffee in his mouth. Okay, so Dougie, Tyson Fury's been on a speaking tour over here. He said that he and Anthony Joshua should stage a big fight between the both of them. Neither of them should get paid. They should do it for the fans. You have 30 seconds to agree with Tyson Fury saying that he and Anthony Joshua shouldn't be paid. They should do it for the fans.
I think it would be a great move. I think that would be one of the biggest ambassador moves that heavyweight champions could make since, you know, Muhammad Ali was on his knockout tooth decay tour in the 1970s visiting schools. You know, he didn't make a lot of money from that, but it was great for his profile and for the entire sport. I think it would attract fans. It really would. Okay. And boxing has given so much to them. Give a little bit back to boxing and the fans.
Perfect.
There's no way I'm going to beat that. That tooth decay shit was top class.
I was watching
When We Were Kings last night, and he actually mentions it on that. So, like, 1,000 points for that.
He pulled that. Dougie pulled that out of some sort of
locker.
I
need some
God
teeth
knows.
Pulled, so it's always in my mind.
Yeah. No pun intended.
Right. That was great. Okay, Tom, you're fighting for second place, but give it your best shot. Okay, so let's marinate these welterweights until 20. Sorry, these lightweights until 2025.
Well, obviously, because it's been so exciting so far. Watching, you know, we've got the Devin Haney Kambosos rematch coming up, and I'm absolutely buzzing for that fight. I mean, I think Kambosos can give Devin Haney a real run for his money this time and shock the world and perhaps beat him in Australia. Then you've got Lomachenko, he's just ready to come back. You know, he could take on a couple of top contenders. By that time, we're probably into 2024 anyway. So super excited about Lomachenko. Ryan Garcia, I don't think he'll move up to 140 pounds. I think he should go through the rest of the Ring magazine top 10 without taking on the true elite. Let's see how good Ryan Garcia can get. There was no way I was going to beat him. No way.
No, sorry. Hey, and you know, Dougie just nailed it with the humor and the nostalgia. You can't beat that, can you? No, and I think that's something that you need to think of moving forwards, Tom, is, you know, nostalgia. You know, that you get that certain urge, you know, and Mr. Tooth Decay just nailed us both straight away, right?
No, Tooth Decay nailed it. I knew as soon as that word came out, I was it. Plus,
do you know as well? Do you know as well?
Doug's had with his teeth. He deserves to win this week.
That's true.
Do you know as well, though, Dougie, it was the way that you framed it, right? You framed it thinking that you had me thinking that you were going to compare it to Ali in the draft. And I was like, oh, no. God, I don't know about that. And then you did the swerve. And that's what got me.
Well, can't you? I mean, can't you see Tyson Fury doing something similar to that? You know what I mean? He kind of has that vibe, that people's champ. Kind of, you know, he's got the playfulness. And, you know.
Doug
if
Tyson Fury told me it was raining outside, I'd go out and check for myself.
Yeah.
Right, guys, on that happy note, it's been a blast. As always, guys, Dougie, you obviously take the round. You might even win next week based on this week.
Yeah.
It was that good. All right, guys, it's been a pleasure. We'll be back soon.